we look ahead into 2021. COVID-19's impact on the legislative session, a potential fight over emergency powers, plus redistricting, the budget, and more on Indiana Week in Review, the week ending January 1st, 2021.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, we look ahead to the 2021 legislative session, a session that's almost certain to be dominated in one way or another by COVID-19. The tone of the session was likely set on Organization Day in November, when leaders of both parties talked about the lessons learned from the COVID-19 pandemic and how they would influence lawmakers' agendas this year. House Speaker Todd Houston said he's learned that the Hoosier State's poor public health has had a disproportionately negative impact during the pandemic.
We have to create incentives and policies to help Hoosiers be healthier, and the House Republican Caucus will bring legislation forward this session to do just that.
Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor says the pandemic exposed sharp disparities that already existed.
And yes, communities of color have now moved to the forefront and are more likely to suffer from this virus.
The legislative session's scheduled start is January 4th. Just how much will COVID-19 dominate the 2021 legislative session? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Jennifer Hollowell, if you're a lawmaker who wants to get something done that isn't technically directly related to COVID, how difficult will that be in the 2021 session?
Well, I do think it's going to be a challenge. Certainly it's a budget session, and everything's going to be dominated by COVID, and the schedule may end up changing. But I think that there are going to be a lot of issues, some directly COVID-related, and some, frankly, issues that were brought to the forefront because of the pandemic. And so you've got things like, you know, broadband access, health issues, as the speaker mentioned. There are a lot of things that I think really we realized are bigger issues that need to be addressed through this time period. And so there'll be kind of second and third layer effects, I think, of issues that come together. But, you know, ultimately they have to pass a budget. They aren't required to do much more than that. Certainly redistricting is going to have to take place also. But I think that it will be a challenge sometimes for us to address issues that that may not fall directly in line.
And we'll talk a little bit more about both redistricting and the budget in a second. But Ann Delaney, in some ways, is COVID-19's focus during this session also going to breathe new life into issues that we've been debating for years? I think about, for instance, increasing the cigarette tax, something that's been debated, passed by the House in multiple past sessions. Could the renewed focus on health outcomes and a need for revenue give new life to that amid COVID-19?
Well, you would hope so. I mean, there was a proposal to put another dollar tax on cigarettes. It would give us money. I mean, I'm happy to hear Speaker Houston talk about the need to address public health. And I hope that as part of that, when you talk about the revenue, that, you know, we're 48th out of the 50 states in what we spend on public health. And that reflects the fact, or actually our poor health showing reflects the fact that we're 48th out of the 50 states in what we spend on education and early treatment, intervention and suggestions and nutrition and all of the things that are so important to public health. So I'm glad to hear that he's going to make that a focus, but partly to do that, you're going to have revenue. And so they're going to have to take off their no tax under any circumstances hats and start thinking about what the public and what the citizens of Indiana really need in order to get and stay healthy and really to reward those people who have been so exemplary through this crisis. I mean, you know, your healthcare workers, your workers in the nursing homes, your teachers above and beyond, you know, all of these people who have stepped up despite the risk, we need to have our priorities reflect their contributions.
Nikki Kelly, Jennifer Hollowell sort of alluded to this, which is we don't really know
what exactly the session is going to look like in terms of how COVID might literally directly impact it in terms of, unfortunately, people getting the virus and having to quarantine, and does that potentially lead to a shutdown? Do we have a lot of those answers even for how the House and Senate are sort of trying to avoid some of those things?
No, I think they're still finalizing sort of protocols on things like testing and who they have to let know if they've had exposure, that type of thing. I think everyone pretty much expects, you know, some sort of slowdown or shutdown at some point. To get that many people around each other day after day after day and not expect some cases, you know, just isn't realistic. And, you know, depending on how bad those shutdowns are, you know, maybe we switch to taking some time off and working more in May and June instead. And that might also help some redistricting issues too.
Yeah, there's a question about when we'll get the information we need to redistrict, but I'll remind the audience that the deadline to adjourn the session is April 29th. However, that deadline exists in state law and is pretty easy to change for, say, 1 year if that needed to happen. Just throwing that out there for no particular reason. John Schwanes, though, lawmakers have also talked about a need to really limit the number of bills that they are offering and considering, because the realities of all of this is that this is not going to be a normal session in every single way, and that they might not be able to get nearly as much done as they'd like to. Is that something that Hoosiers should expect for this 1 year?
Oh, I think there will be a contraction in capacity, and that may translate into a limit, meaning that there are fewer bills introduced by members of the House and Senate. And I do think the vast majority will either have a direct focus on COVID-19 issues, or to the extent that somebody can take an issue and argue in some tangential fashion that this will benefit the state if and when the next pandemic rolls around, we'll see that. I wouldn't be surprised, for instance, during the budget proceedings to see any and all the universities, certainly the research institutions in the state, make a pitch for any plans that they've had sort of in the closet for additional scientific research, vaccination research, cutting edge research in terms of those types of things. If ever there would be an appetite in the capital budget or even operating for expansion in that area, it would probably happen. And lastly, I'm not sure that they would even need to change the law to, yes, that's one way to do it, but I think without a state budget, the simplest solution is for the governor to call them back into session. I assume since there's super majorities of Republicans in the House and Senate and you have a Republican governor, they can work together without having to enact legislation to change the schedule and in the manner in which special sessions are called.
Well, speaking of the governor and the super majorities working together, a majority of Hoosiers say the governor's emergency powers should be more limited. That's according to the latest edition of the Ball State Hoosier Survey.
The latest poll of 600 Hoosiers shows that 60% of respondents support changing Indiana law to require the General Assembly to approve any extension of a governor's emergency order beyond 30 days. That includes 56% of Democrats and 63% of Republicans in the survey. The results come ahead of a likely debate in the 2021 session over many Republican lawmakers' desire to curtail the governor's emergency powers. Ball State political scientist Charles Taylor says it will be a test of Governor Eric Holcomb's leadership and sway over the GOP-controlled General Assembly.
To try and, you know, talk them down from, you know, any proposals that would severely limit, you know, future governors or, you know, limit him in his second term.
Legislative leaders have already said they intend to at least debate the issue.
And Delaney, we've gone 9-10 months of the governor setting, you know, establishing this public health emergency, issuing executive order after executive order to try and confront it, with no literal input from the General Assembly, though, of course, the governor has said he has talked with legislative leaders. So should the General Assembly tighten its control or assert more authority over those emergency powers of the governor?
Well, you know, I don't know where I take the governor at his word. He's been talking to the leadership, but I haven't heard a hue and cry from the leadership or from anybody in the General Assembly calling for a special session to debate this while it was going on. And I don't know how realistic it is to set an arbitrary 30-day deadline. I mean, if we're in the middle of a severe pandemic, what happens if you can't get a quorum? What happens if you have legislators who are either worried about contracting whatever the next pandemic is, or are already under the weather. And what happens then? The emergency order just expires, even at a time when we would need it the most? I think you have to be realistic. Governor Holcomb didn't make anybody happy. He didn't make his right wing happy because he presumably did so much. And he didn't make the people that were worried about the health and safety of Hoosiers happy because he did too little. So, you know, I think you chalk that up. This isn't going to happen every year, but it's going to happen again in the future. And I think hogtying a governor when you can't predict what the next crisis is not very good public policy.
Jennifer Hollowell, is Governor Eric Holcomb headed for a fight with the legislature over this issue?
You know, I understand there have been discussions over the last several months, and I think that there are some folks who've raised concerns, but ultimately, as Ann and others have indicated, the governor has to be able to operate and run the state, and it's not always feasible or advisable to bring 150 legislators to Indianapolis, especially during a pandemic. So, I think that there will be some discussion around this, but I don't expect that it will be a contentious issue.
John Schwanes, would you predict that we will see some changes to the governor's emergency power authority?
I think at the edges we might see some changes. It might be some sort of additional layer of review by the legislative branch, whether that I'm not sure it would necessarily be able to require a quorum for the reasons Ann mentioned. How do you get 150 people or at least two-thirds of those people to Indianapolis to conduct business? So maybe it would be some sort of legislative leadership review or some other group that might be easier to convene. I doubt we'll go back to what we had, for instance, before. You know, this all came out of Hurricane Katrina, I believe, in the aftermath when states across the country were saying, hey, what if, you know, if not a hurricane, I doubt a hurricane's going to hit Indiana. But if some similar sort of disaster with its that significant impact, and what would we do? And so I don't think we'll go back to before that when there was really nothing on the books, just some work at the margins.
Nikki Kelly, in terms of the chances of something happening to that emergency authority, you and I have both talked to Republican lawmakers. There is not a small number of people who don't like all of the power that Eric Holcomb has had for the last 10 months.
Yeah, virtually every GOP lawmaker I've talked to wants some sort of discussion. Now, there's probably a middle ground between, you know, a 30-day or nothing, you know, or 9 months and 10 months and keep reviewing it. Some things I've heard are basically saying maybe he can do it for 3 months and then the legislature would have to actually act. So to Ann's point from earlier, you know, if they couldn't get there, whatever, it wouldn't expire. It would require like a proactive vote to stop it in order. So that's okay. One option that's on the table.
All right. Well, 2021 is a redistricting year, and Indiana voter advocacy groups are creating what they're calling a shadow redistricting commission to give Hoosiers what they say is an independent contrast when lawmakers redraw those legislative district lines. Groups like Common Cause Indiana have long called for an independent redistricting commission to draw Indiana's legislative maps. Taking it out of the hands of lawmakers, they say, will result in fairer, more competitive districts. Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray, whose Republican caucus has long opposed such a commission, says a truly independent body would be difficult, if not impossible, to put together.
You can say it's a nonpartisan board that you would appoint, but everybody comes to the poll or any position with some political interest, and the people that are going to appoint that nonpartisan person are probably going to have an interest in what that person's philosophy is either, whether it's publicly known or not.
But Common Cause Indiana Director Julia Vaughn says that's exactly what this shadow commission hopes to dispel. She says the group will include Republicans, Democrats, and people who don't belong to either party. The shadow commission has no actual power. It serves as a public alternative to whatever maps lawmakers draw in 2021. Jennifer Hollowell, I'm going to come to you first on this question. Do you think this shadow commission that they're calling it will have any sort of practical effect on the redistricting process this year?
I don't think it will. And I completely agree with Pro Tem Senator Bray. it's not possible to have a group without bias. Everyone is going to bring bias to the situation. And, you know, whether it's different organizations, nonprofits, et cetera, they have political leanings. And frankly, I think it's better to leave the process up to people who represent the voters of the state. They have both the speaker and Senate President Pro Tem Bray have said that they're going to hold public hearings. It's going to be a transparent process. And so the public will have an opportunity to weigh in and shape that process. But I believe that it is, as it should be, a decision made by legislators who are elected by voters.
And Delaney, will this commission have any practical effect?
I think it might shame the Republican supermajorities into doing something a little bit more fair. When you look at some of these districts, you would have to be a theologian to justify the parameters of the districts that have been drawn. And I find it really ironic when Senator Bray says you can't have a nonpartisan commission. You can have nonpartisan facts. I mean, you can have statistics and all, and areas of interest and natural boundaries and things that make sense. Instead of having a nonpartisan board, he wants to have the ultimately most partisan group make the decision, the people that are holding those seats. And you don't think they want to protect them? These are people who think they ought to choose their voters rather than having their voters choose them. And they've taken it up to an art form with computers. So it is the height of hypocrisy for him to say that you can't have nonpartisanship when he and his caucus and the caucus in the House are the most partisan of all.
John Schwanes, I asked originally about practical effect, and I want to ask that again, but not maybe in the short term, in the long term. Certainly voter advocacy groups will continue to advocate for an independent commission to draw Indiana's district lines into the next decade before we draw district lines again 10 years from now. Will having this group design a map and being able to contrast that with whatever lawmakers come up with into the future, will that give them more hope that change comes in the future?
Maybe. I doubt it's going to, as a practical matter, it will not change the outcome. The maps that the Republican supermajorities want to produce will in the end be the maps that the Republican supermajorities want to produce. But clearly, as we see fewer and fewer contested races, and while we see voter turnout suffering accordingly, with this past election being a bit of an exception, perhaps because of the presidential contest, I think we'll get to a point where people will say, gee, we would like to actually have races in our legislative districts that we can actually vote for. And clearly the current system is discouraging that. I guess if you want to take the politics out of it, you could say have it in with the emergence of artificial intelligence, and you could probably have it. You could probably have it. I mean, I'm only being half facetious. You probably could have an algorithm that would at least be a starting point. Now, obviously someone will say, well, humans write the algorithms. That's true. But at least if you wanted to have a starting point where it's just blindly population centers, you know, the notion of having contiguous areas and not splitting cities and those types of things, that might be a starting point at least.
I think that's the first step to Skynet, John. Well, lawmakers will write a new two-year state budget this session, and it's not nearly as rosy as anyone would have hoped, obviously. Now, as we tape this, we do not know what the latest revenue forecast looks like, but it's likely legislators will have to make plenty of tough decisions about spending the next couple of years as the pandemic has wreaked havoc on state finances as well as, of course, personal finances across the state. Governor Holcomb was able to ensure K-12 schools got their full funding for the current budget year. However, Nikki Kelly, will schools be spared the knife in the upcoming budget? What do you have to say?
It's going to be really hard, I think, to avoid that. I think maybe even hoping for a status quo budget would be the best option. Obviously, when you have $7 billion a year spent on K-12, even a 1% increase is a massive amount of money that you either have to find in new revenue or take from someplace else.
John Schwanes, to Nikki's point, is a status quo budget, literally getting the same money they got in the last two-year state budget, is that really the best-case scenario for a lot of folks?
Realistically, it probably would be about as good as we might expect, which is which is tough because one could argue that in the wake of the pandemic, there never has been a greater need for education funding, because I think through no one's fault, but just the fate of the pandemic, we have kids who are really have been dealt a significant blow in their fundamental skill development, especially in the primary grades with math and basic English and grammar. So you would argue that this is, if ever there were a time to bump it up significantly, this would probably be it. But then that wish and the reality of tight budgets will undoubtedly collide.
Well, I think that ends up being the case with a lot of issues. I think we've talked about it already today, the renewed focus on the need for broadband. Where do you find the money for that when you now need it perhaps more than ever? But Jennifer Hollowell, I want to ask you, as we look ahead to the state budget, how much will sort of end up being determined by whether or not we get more federal relief? And when I say federal relief, I mean directly to state and local governments.
I think that is a significant factor, and you know, certainly wish that the folks in Washington could come up with a plan that will help state and local communities. We clearly need more COVID relief funding, and the sooner the better. I will say, as it relates to education, keep in mind that Governor Holcomb and the Republican General Assembly increased the K-12 education budget in the last cycle by $760 million, which is great and certainly a good place to start. But, you know, the governor has stated that, that education is a priority. The House Speaker has, as well as the Senate President Pro Tem. So it's going to be a top priority, but we are going to have to make some decisions, and it's going to be a really difficult budget cycle. And a lot of folks are going to be probably disappointed.
If, Andalini, if education simply can't get a budget increase in the next two-year state budget, is it hard to blame lawmakers for that?
Oh, I think it is, actually, because the entire budget isn't determined only by spending. It's also been determined by revenue. And yes, Washington should help. And let's make it clear, the Democrats in the House have proposed funding for local and state budgets. It's Mitch McConnell who won't let that occur, okay, number one. And number two, you know, there are revenue sources. You mentioned the tobacco tax. That's there. We could roll back that silly little income tax cut that Mike Pence put in and the corporate tax cuts that are going through. There are ways to increase revenue. The governor had promised teachers not just that they would be kept whole, but that we would actually begin to fund them commensurate with their contribution to this state. And if you're going to flatline or cut the budget, you're not going to do that. And that's inexcusable. We still have teachers making less than warehouse stockers and doing, not that warehouse, stocking warehouses isn't important work, but it doesn't require an advanced degree. And it doesn't require the same kind of input that teachers do. And if the governor fails to live up to his promise, yes, I think he does deserve the blame. Yes.
Well, let's not forget also that teacher salary is not determined by the state. It's determined by the local school board.
It's determined by how much money the local schools have to pay. And there are ways to make it determined by the state by giving incentive
to schools to
raise the salary.
They have resisted doing that. All right. Very quickly, 2020 brought a renewed focus on racial inequity and police killings in the wake of the killings of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, among others. And that prompted the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus to develop an even more robust agenda than usual for 2021. Now, Republican Representative Greg Stuwald is privately working on what hopes to be a consensus agenda for police reform issues. But, Andalini, will we see the General Assembly pass any police reform legislation in 2021? And if it does, will it be something the Black Caucus will support? Very quickly.
I think Representative Stuwald is working hard to come up with a kind of a compromise solution that I think will not be everything that the Black Caucus wants, but will be an improvement. But we have to get Republican rural legislators to say, let the cities deal with this problem. This is part of the difficulty. They want to intrude themselves on how the cities deal with the issue of racial inequality in the criminal justice system. And that's just not acceptable. Let the locals deal with this, and a lot of the problem will go away, and they won't even have to cast the terrible votes they don't want to cast.
Jennifer,
that would be the way, it seems to me, the Black Caucus would be the happiest.
Jennifer Hollowell, same question to you. Will there be police reform legislation? Will it be the kind of legislation that the Black Caucus would support?
I think there will be robust discussion around this, and I do think that something will probably pass. And frankly, I think it'll be more than what anyone could have imagined a year ago. And also, I would just point out that Governor Holcomb has already taken steps with the state police to make changes at the state level, which he can control.
Yeah, at the state police academy. Well, that is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, happy new year, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana year and an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.